100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, hey, it's Digital Sista, and I'm back. Well, I'm going to be dropping my podcast now on Wednesdays because my radio show on Global Talk Radio has moved to Wednesday at 5 p.m. So I'm going to be dropping my podcast right after that. So from now on, look for a new podcast on Wednesday. In any event, I want you to tune into Digital Sista 54 because that is a big milestone for me. It was my first official interview that I was able to upload and get on the Digital Sista homepage. You know, I'm still working out some things as I'm learning how to do it. You know, we'll work on the audio and get that a little tighter, but it's just a big step for me to take that next step and have my first interview on Digital Sista. So I'm really, really very excited about that and hope that, you know, you tune in and listen to it and pass it around. In any event, let me catch up on what's going on. Okay. So we have Foxy Brown. She's back in trouble because she was arrested recently in Florida. And where does she show up? She shows up at a church in Brooklyn to tell her story about what happened at the arrest. And unfortunately, you know, she got into a scuffle with police down in Pembroke Pines, Florida. You know, she spit on the store owner and just all kinds of ugly things. So in any event, she's been arrested again and is trying to, downplay her image as if she did nothing wrong. And that's really, really unfortunate. As I said in podcasts from long, long ago, I think Foxy needs to find a label and she needs to be recording and just getting right back into her music. You know, maybe it's hooking up with Lil' Kim now that she's out. I know they have a little rivalry, but maybe, you know, bury the hatchet so you can just get back to making some music. Or, you know, do something with Busta. I don't know. But it seems to me that she really needs to get back to making some music and to get her energy more focused back on the music rather than having these little altercations, with people who are just going to do nothing but add more to her file. It's just going to make it more difficult for her to do other things. She's known for her sexy outfits and racy lyrics, and I guess her two albums were Il Nana from a couple of years ago and China Doll. So I think she does what a lot of people do when they get in trouble. They run back to environments where they think they're going to get the support and without people saying, hey, what did you really do that caused the problem? So Foxy, if you're listening to me, please, please get back to making some music because, you know, that's what we want to hear from you. We don't want to just hear that you're always having troubles and getting arrested for basically bad behavior. So please, please get back to making some music. Oh my God, what is going on with James Brown? This whole thing is turning into shades of Anna Nicole, and who, you know, I have nothing bad to say about Anna Nicole, and I wish that they would settle whatever they have to settle and just let her rest in peace and be buried next to her son in the Bahamas. But it just seems to be, a mysterious thing with all these twists and turns. It's just like with James Brown. He's got a whole new mess going on. It's bad enough that the family and Tommy Ray couldn't decide on where to bury the guy because he still hasn't been buried yet. But you know, they also now have to take samples of DNA to prevent, now get this, prevent in case, in the event that random individuals show up claiming to be his kids. So if that kind of thing is going on, I guess he really was the sex machine, you know, like his old record from the late 60s and early 70s. But I mean, my God, you know, the man died on Christmas Day in December and he still has not been buried. I just think that's obscene and it's really sad. And apparently they have to do this DNA now before they actually do bury him, because when they do bury him, it's going to be, you know, a whole lot more difficult and I'm sure a whole lot more expensive to, you know, bring the body back up and then to do it. So, you know, I hope they can just settle it and please bury this man. I think he would be turning in his grave if he knew the kind of sideshow that's been going on since he passed away. I mean, he really deserves so much better from the family and from the, quote, wife. He deserves just so much better. Bobby Brown. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Well, yes, I can. He was arrested because he was in Massachusetts to see his daughter's cheerleading contest. Now, if you remember when he got bailed out the last time he had the child support issue, they told him, if you step foot in Massachusetts and you haven't paid, you're going to be arrested. Well, I guess he ignored what they said, and they arrested him. So now he's been sentenced to 10 to 30 days in jail. And he was given the chance to avoid the incarceration if he could come up with the $19,000 in full. But apparently he has not been able to come up with that, so he's still sitting in jail. Now, you know, not to be vicious or anything, but I'm just wondering, is Superhead Video Vixen going to help him out and bail him out like Whitney did all these years? I think not, because he's still there. And I think that really speaks to the fact we know who was really, you know, paying a lot of those bills and getting him out of trouble. It was Whitney. And now that she's divorced him, you know, the money has dried up. And so he's probably going to have a difficult time coming up with that money unless, you know, friends or families or new edition members come up to help. But it doesn't look like it's panning out that way. And I have to say the same thing about him that I would say about Foxy Brown. You really need to just get it together and get back to making music. I mean, wasn't Whitney calling him the king of R&B or whatever? Well, if that's the case, get back to making some music and just get on with your life. Because, again, we want to read more positive things about you than just your problems with child support and all that kind of stuff. And who's to say, you know, New Edition was just in town in Cleveland on tour, but without Bobby. And, you know, given how Bobby behaved on the Tom Joyner cruise, you know, people may not want to see him. And he may just be too messed up to even be on tour. But I hope that, you know, he finds his way and can get back to doing what he really probably loves to do, which is making music and going on tour and making records. But again, you know, the industry's different and things are different. So he's really going to have to get himself together so he can go back on tour, because it's probably unlikely that anyone's going to sign him anytime soon to a record deal. And let's face it, the way the industry has changed, there's only about 3 or 4 major record labels left because they've gobbled up all of the independents, you know. But that also means, would he have the wherewithal to perhaps self produce and put out his own label? You know, that remains to be seen, because he hasn't done it yet. But I just hope, you know, he gets it together and can find his way back to his music. Oh my God, Wu-Tang Clan. Yay, yay, yay. So Wu-Tang and Rage Against the Machine are going to be doing 3 separate shows and a concert and going on tour. And they first paired for a tour back in 1997, and they're going to reunite August 11th and 18th at the Rock the Bells Festival in San Bernardino, California, and in San Francisco. That should be pretty hot. And then they're hoping to do something on the East Coast, maybe July 28th on Randall Island. So I hope that'll be just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Wu-Tang hasn't really put out an album since 2001. You know, Ghostface Killah's done a couple of solo things, but as the group, they haven't done anything since 2001. The last thing that they did was in 2004 when Old Dirty Bastard was still alive. So I think a lot of people, I know I'm excited to have the possibility that they're coming back on tour. But you see what's happening with a lot of these groups. Yes, some of the members go off and do solo projects, but in the end, it seems that they really have the most success when they come back and as a group and go on tour. That apparently is what everybody is doing now, because they have something called 8 Diagrams on SRC Records, which probably is an indie or maybe something that they even founded. So a lot of the artists, that's what they're doing. I mean, New Edition, Wu-Tang Clan, SUV, After 7, you know, all these groups are going on tour because they may or may not have, you know, record deals. And this is how artists make a good amount of money. So anyway, kudos, kudos, kudos. I am glad that Wu-Tang is going back on tour. Maybe we'll see something as hot as that video a couple years ago. Remember Triumph with the bees and all that? I just love that one. In any event, I was watching TV over the weekend, and I happened to watch some two specials produced by Quincy Jones III, QD3 Productions, and one was called Black and Blue, Legend of the Hip-Hop Cop, which I thought was very interesting, how he really chronicled how when Ice-T came out with Cop Killer and NWA came out with their cop-hating song, you know, I think it was called Fuck the Police, something like that. In any event, when they came out with that, they were really talking about what was going on with the LAPD and how many of them were being harassed and stopped for no reason at all. And if you happen to read Jerry Heller's book, Ruthless Memoir, he really chronicles what was going on in California back in the 80s in particular, when a lot of the gangster rap that he pioneered came to the forefront. Because basically what they were rapping about is what they were seeing in their neighborhood, the harassment they were getting from the cops, and the onslaught of crack in the black community. And so this TV documentary that QD3 has put together was very interesting because it really talked about that and how this whole, there was so much fear, you know, with the NYPD and with some of the West Coast police, and they thought that this genre of music was something that they had to police. I mean, they didn't really do that, I think, with rock and roll and some of the other genres, but with rap and hip-hop, I mean, the police were dead on it. And so it gave me, I think, great insight to understand where some of the music comes from with some of the rappers, you know, and why they were so hostile against the police. And really, they were just writing songs reflecting what they were experiencing. And then here comes QD3 with his documentary talking about the hip-hop cop. And his name was, Dennis Parker. That's who it really was. And so they had a hip-hop squad, you know, people who were put together to do surveillance of hip-hop stars and rappers, you know, following them at the airports, doing surveillance of them, seeing who the people are that they are in contact with, who's part of the entourage, you know, hotels they were staying at, probably even had phones tapped, but this whole kind of SWAT behavior with hip-hop stars. It's very, very fascinating to see how the police felt that they had to do this. And then on one hand, they justify it by saying they were doing a lot of this surveillance because of the violence that was erupting within the hip-hop community. So, for instance, if, you know, let's say one rapper from the West Coast was in town and an East Coast rapper was there, the police justified the hip-hop squad surveillance by saying that they were preventing violence by knowing ahead of time that these two factions were going to be in the same location at the same time. So that's what they would say to justify this. But on the other hand, you have some situations where they're just taunting a lot of the stars, you know, the hip-hop stars, and doing what they can to intimidate. So I thought it was just a great, interesting documentary to help you understand where some of that rage comes from in the music and the fact that it was really based on reality. It wasn't something that they were just dreaming up and making up. They were dealing with this stuff every day in their neighborhoods in Compton, various places in L.A., and on the streets of New York City. So a very interesting documentary that he has worked on. And he also did something, because I watched that too, was a documentary about Tupac, which I thought was very interesting too, and very balanced, because he was obviously very gifted, as we all know, and a poet and all that, but he also had some personality issues, and I think people were very fair about presenting that in the documentary. And QD3 also produced that because at one time Tupac was talking about, you know, Quincy Jones and the fact that he, you know, likes white women and that's who he married. And, you know, he said some stuff kind of foul about him and the fact that, you know, he had biracial kids, which didn't go over well with Quincy, but Quincy, you know, met with him at Jerry's Deli, I guess, in Beverly Hills, and had a conversation with him. And his daughter, Rashida, actually wrote a letter to Tupac saying she didn't think it was fair what he was saying, et cetera, et cetera. And as it turned out, he was chasing Rashida around, but he really had a thing for Keydata. And so at the time of his death, I guess he was going with Quincy's youngest daughter, Keydata. But in any event, it was interesting to hear what Quincy's thoughts were about the whole situation and what he thought about Tupac. And everybody kind of said the same thing. He was gifted, but he was a little bit of a nut. And then, you know, when you would hear him talk, I'm talking about Tupac, he would think sometimes, you know, yeah, he's obviously very, you know, very bright, very gifted, but obviously kind of out there. And that's what came across. But I thought very good documentaries, and I think QD3, he's, you know, produced some people and done some things, but I think he's found an interesting niche, like his dad, you know, to really chronicle interesting facts and things that have come out of the hip-hop industry. So I just thought it was, you know, very interesting, very well done, and it gave me a lot more insight about the dynamics of which a lot of these hip-hop artists come from and what they were writing about. And it fills in a lot of gaps, like I said, when I read, you know, Jerry Heller's book too, which I would suggest that you get if you're interested in the whole hip-hop thing, especially gangster rap and how that came to be. But moving on, talking about Quincy Jones, the dad, he's planning on doing a movie about Brazil and the whole thing about Carnival. I mean, I can't wait to see that because I just got back from Africa, which was a fabulous trip, but Brazil is also one of those places I would like to travel to, and I certainly would love to travel there at the time of Carnival to see just how fabulous that is. So he's planning on doing a movie about that, so I think that's going to be really pretty interesting and something that I definitely will want to check out. Now, what's up with Ray J? I mean, is he as hot as he thinks he is? I mean, he has this porno film coming out from Vivid Entertainment that he did. It's titled Kim Superstar, that he did with his girlfriend at the time, Kim Kardashian. And apparently, they want to put this out all over the internet, but for some reason they have halted distribution because Kim Kardashian is like pitching a fit because she doesn't want that shown. So in any event, I guess Ray J is like some hot stuff because, you know, he's been seeing around escorting Little Kim. I mean, for a minute there, he was, you know, being seen with Whitney. So, hey, he must be putting his thing down because everybody's wanting to check out Ray J. But, hey, who would have thought Brandy's little brother was a porno star? Very interesting. Well, we have to send out our condolences to Ludacris because his dad, Mr. Wayne Bridges, passed away at such a young age. He was only 52, which is just way too young, you know, to pass away. So we want to send out our condolences to Ludacris and his family, and we just hope that you can, you know, deal with this very difficult time. And I hope that people will respect, you know, his need for privacy, too, as the family deals with the loss and the funeral and everything else that goes along with that. So our sympathies go out to Ludacris and his family. Now, let's talk about Common. He's got to be very careful that he isn't a hypocrite, because you may or may not have seen it recently, but he did a freestyle at Emory University, and one of the lines was, you know, F them damn Iggas from Duke lacrosse. And he's talking about, you know, the case at Duke with the lacrosse members that allegedly had raped the African-American dancer who was there to entertain. Well, you all know a lot of that case has fallen apart, but there's still some ramifications. And, you know, Common said, "I really, in my heart, believe that those boys in Duke lacrosse did it, that they raped a black princess." Now, even though he felt like that, he accepted the check to perform at Duke University. So I think, you know, you're saying one thing, Common, and you're feeling something else, but, you know, I don't think you can mesh the two. If you really feel as strongly as you do, then, in my opinion, you probably shouldn't have accepted the check to perform at Duke, you know? If you feel that strongly, I would think that you wouldn't even go there. You certainly wouldn't accept the check. So again, you know, we have to be very careful out there, you know? Don't be a hypocrite. If you feel strongly about something, then don't take the money and go there. But he's going to have, I think, he's going to come into some static about that, you know? I don't think you can have it both ways. I think a lot of people think that you can, but I don't think you can. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens. Will he, in fact, perform at Duke and say something to the effect, some kind of apology, or will he not address it? Will he just take the check? I mean, it's just going to be very interesting to see how he handles that, because, you know, the performance and what he said is all over YouTube, and that's going to be pretty difficult to deny. So, you know, don't be a hypocrite. You know, if you feel strongly about something, stick with your guns and don't do it. But it makes you look like a hypocrite if you do something other than that. So that's what he's wrestling with now. And, you know, I'm sure some other people are going to have that same situation. I mean, Bernice King had that, you know. A while ago, I talked about that. You know, she's a pastor with the mega church, New Birth, with Bishop Eddie Long. But yet, you know, you were selling your dad's papers for auction for money. You say you want to take on the mantle of what your parents believed in, but yet, you know, you're having to resolve these other issues. So, you know, the hypocrisy comes into play. So, again, you know, have some character. Think about what you're doing. Don't try to play both sides, because, you know, it comes back to bite you in times when you least expect it. So, you know, that's all I'll say about that. Now, a little bit of information for your information. Here are the 10 biggest interview killers. Now, remember at the beginning of the year, I gave you some information about if you're thinking about changing your job or just thinking about making some changes, period, some things you ought to consider. Well, these are some things you want to consider, too, because I think in society now, we're getting a little less formal and people are getting more friendly and whatever. You know, you still have to maintain some of that formality in certain situations. So let's just give you the 10 so that if you are someone who is in the process of starting to go on interviews, you want to keep this in mind. Number one. Now, these are advantage killers, okay? And you want to stay away from them during the interview. Not knowing what your aim is. Too often, candidates get these interviews and they start going after things, but clearly, your goals and what you want to do may not fit what you're interviewing for. And so that's going to come out pretty quickly if there's not a good match. So before you even accept the interview, make sure that you know what your goal is and what the aim is, and make sure what you want and what the position is offering are in sync. Otherwise, you're just going to really blow it, and you know, you may not get a second chance to get another interview. Okay, number two, being too needy. Now, if you need this job too much, it's probably going to come across that you're desperate. So, you know, make sure that you already have a job or you have enough resources that you're not going to go to that interview all but begging for the job, you know, because that's going to stick out like a sore thumb, too, if you come off like, oh, I really need this job. You know, you got to be cool, calm, and present in the moment. So, yeah, make sure you're not too needy when you go for those job interviews. Lousy nonverbal communication. This is something that I see all the time. You know, if you're not giving the interviewer eye contact, if you're looking around, if you're rolling your eyes, if you're twitching and moving around too much, I mean, that's stuff that's going to register to the interviewer that you are just not the person for this job. And that, you know, why did you even bother wasting our time? So, you know, make sure you have eye contact. Make sure you give that firm handshake. Make sure that you listen more than you talk, because if you talk too much, you're going to come off as too needy. But, you know, pay attention to what you're doing, because you want to put your best foot forward. Number four, compromising your position. Okay? Make sure that you participate in the interview as an equal, not a subordinate. So don't let the interviewer feel as though this person is lording so much more over you. You're there on an even keel, you know, because you're an interviewee and you're there to be interviewed for a job. So don't let the power come into play too much. Falling into the answers only rut, okay? So make sure that you answer whatever question is asked. Don't go off track. Don't answer too little, but figure out a way that you are answering the question in an energetic, interesting way, and that you just don't fall into the rut that most people would answer the question. You know, you want yourself to shine. You want yourself to stand out. So figure out, you know, an interesting way to present yourself and make your answers unique, not like a common rut. Rambling. If you're talking too much, what happens is you forget, and then you start going off on different tangents. And then, you know, that happens very often to us. We're talking, and we go, oh, my God, what was my point? And then, you know, you've lost your point because you're rambling. So you just want to tell your interviewer what they need to know. Don't overdo it because there's a good chance you might get off track. And don't fill up the silence with unnecessary talk. It's okay if there's a little silence. And, you know, let's look at the interviewer. They're looking to see how you handle yourself. So if you're uncomfortable with some silence and you feel you have to talk incessantly, you know, that's going to be a red flag to the interviewer that you may not be the right candidate for the job. Being overly familiar. You also want to remember that this is probably someone you've never met before, so you want to say Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so. You know, if you feel a level of comfort, you know, be sure to ask if it's okay if I call you by your first name first. Don't automatically assume that you can do that, because people don't like that. You know, they like it if they know you, but if they don't know you, they don't like it. So don't be too familiar, given that in many ways, in some ways, we're more of a relaxed society today. Making incorrect assumptions. Make sure you do your homework. You know, take some notes before you go in there. Don't put your foot in your mouth making assumptions about things, okay? Find out as much as you can before you go in there. And listen, if you don't know, ask, okay? Just don't ramrod yourself and make yourself look bad. Getting emotional. Don't cry. Don't get into an emotional outburst. Don't suck your teeth. Don't do anything that's going to register to the interviewer that you cannot control your emotions. You know, you've got to be cool, calm, and collected while you're sitting in that chair for that interview. Not asking specific questions. Again, be prepared. Ask relevant questions that you would ask for that position. If you ask lightweight questions or you don't ask enough, that's going to be a red flag to the interviewer that perhaps you're not interested, or again, you're just not the candidate for the job. So again, take those 10 points close to heart if you happen to be in the process of looking for an interview. What's going on with Hillary and Obama? I talked about this in a couple of podcasts ago. It's very, very interesting. Obama was here in Cleveland the other night. Unfortunately, I couldn't go because I had a class that night. But it's very interesting to see how the lines are lining up in the sand and what's going to happen. You know, there was a flap a few weeks ago where the Hollywood bigwigs, David Geffen, was stirring up the pot by having a big fundraiser for Obama in Hollywood and saying that Hillary is polarizing and all of that. And the irony of the whole thing was that Geffen was a big supporter of the Clintons, you know, giving them like, you know, $18 million, a couple million dollars. And now he seems to be lending his support to Obama because, you know, he wants something fresh. And so he was stirring up the pot, saying some things. And so then you have the Hillary camp telling Obama that they need to give back the money, which, you know, he shouldn't do. And then you have Hillary in South Carolina with one of the leaders in South Carolina saying that he thinks Obama's just going to be a drag on the Democratic race because he's black. But you see, Hillary didn't recuse herself from his support with his comments. So again, you know, you get back into that hypocrisy, you know? You can't say one thing, and then when it happens in your camp, you don't do anything, but then you want to tell somebody else what to do. So I think, you know, we're just seeing the beginning of some interesting campaign tactics that probably, I hope it doesn't get too bad, but it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out, because I think Obama's giving a lot of them a race for their money. You know, he was educated at Harvard. He knows how the game is played. He's held elective office in Illinois. He's one of them, you know, and I think that's what's shaking them in their boots, too. He's not, you know, a civil rights preacher who's coming to the forefront like that. This is an educated guy, an Ivy League educated guy who knows how the game is played, and he's nobody's fool. So I think that is what everybody is dealing with. Because remember, when Obama first got to the Senate, he had a little tiff with candidate John McCain. And to me, it was really just a situation where you have older white men who are accustomed to having things their way. They're not accustomed to having a young African-American who is probably a lot more educated than they are in the Senate. And so egos come into play. And that's what came into play with John McCain and Senator Obama, you know, earlier in the year. And so it's just going to be very interesting to see how the old guard deals with some new talent. And as much as some of them would like to see themselves as liberals and inclusive and believing in diversity, is that really going to be the case now that Obama's, you know, smack dab in their face, running on their level and running for president? So it'll be very interesting to see what people's attitudes really, really are. And that's going to come up, you know, more and more as we see the campaigns really taking off and doing the work as they all travel around the country. Very interesting. So let's stay tuned for that and see exactly what happens with that. But in any event, I have taken up enough of your time. You know, I just love talking to you and being in touch with you, and continue to listen to the podcast and to pass it around. I thank you so much for that, and I thank you so much for being patient with me as I learn how to do other technological things to spice up the podcast. So again, thanks for tuning in. I will be back with you in a few days. It will probably be next Wednesday. Have a great week, and thank you for listening to Digital Sister and helping to put Digital Sister on the map. Take care.
Can't mess with this.